Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, January 18th, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Carla and Jim, are you with us?
We're here.
We are. And,
okay.
We haven't had too much of interest this week, but I do have a funny little story to tell. I'm getting over a cough and a cold, whatever you want to call it. I don't think it was the flu, but it was the creeping crud. And the doctor was concerned it might be something like bronchitis or pneumonia because the chest was real tight. So I had to go for a chest x-ray. And I can't stand at this point in my life. I have to have help if I, stand. So she says, the x-ray technician says, well, stand up and I'll take an x-ray. And I said, well, I really can't do that. Maybe my husband can hold me up or something like that. And she said, well, no, just hold on to this walker. So I'm holding on to the walker for dear life. It's not, it's very, very difficult for me to support myself. And I'm doing it the very best I can. And I cough. And she says, cover your mouth.
Oh,
and I looked at her
kidding?
And I said, no, I'm not. And I said, normally I would. But I really can't figure out how to do that right now.
Oh, wow.
Oh, gosh, I thought it was funny. I was roaring all the way home. How are you?
Great. I can't believe she asked you to cover your mouth. I mean, you didn't
really
see your hands.
Well, people are getting a little freaky about this.
Wow.
Oh, goodness.
Well, probably just didn't really tune in,
Well, on her job. A nurse or whatever, so I don't blame her. People are a little concerned about getting this stuff because it's so widespread. So, anything big in your life?
I'm almost over. What's that?
Anything big in your life?
Not in particular, not anything I really want to say on the air, but good. Overall, things are good. I can't really complain.
Excellent.
Doing good. Yeah, but I know what it's like to have bronchitis. I used to get bronchitis every winter, just horrible. I mean, I'd be sick for 4 weeks without fail every single winter. This went on for years. I haven't had it in 5 years, so I'm
That's
really
good.
Happy about that. But I remember what it was like, so I can definitely sympathize. So anyway, I'm glad you're doing better. That's great.
Yes, indeed.
Jim, hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's decent weather outside. You either go inside or outside. So we've been enjoying some of the sunshine we're having. getting work done in the house. I'm having a chance to answer some emails from Law of One readers, which I haven't had a chance to do in a long time, but now I can do because I'm retired. So I'm enjoying my
All right. All right. Rock and roll. That's great. Okay. I'm going to go to our opening riff then. And this is from Raw, Session 71, Question 17. Questioner, the change in consciousness should result in a greater distortion towards service to others, towards unity with all, and towards knowing in order to serve. Is this correct, and are there any other desired results? I am Ra. These are commendable phrases. The heart of white magic is the experience of the joy of union with the Creator. This joy will, of necessity, radiate throughout the life experience of the positive adept. It is for this reason that sexual magic is not restricted solely to the negatively oriented polarizing adepts, but, when most carefully used, has its place in high magic, as it, when correctly pursued, joins body, mind, and spirit with the one infinite Creator. Any purpose which you may frame should, we suggest, take into consideration this basic union with the one infinite Creator, for this union will result in service to others of necessity.
Thank you, Monica. Excuse me. I chose this question largely because there's been a question on the sheet for weeks and weeks from Casey Gal. And she's been very interested in magic and wanted to know what my take on it was. And she studied it, the raw material, so she said she would like a simple explanation of what magic means. You're not talking about the tarot card or the magician. Now, I go way back with magic, with white ceremonial magic, I should say, of the West. It's a very specific discipline, and it is most closely allied with the priesthood. White magical ritual that most people are familiar with is Holy Communion or Holy Eucharist in the Christian Church, and the priest through a series of prayers tunes both himself and the congregation to the very highest level of awareness possible. All sins are confessed in the general confession, and with the self washed clean, the whole congregation is ready to move into Christhood. Then the priest lifts himself up and says some prayers at the altar that are strictly for himself. And then he holds his hands over the wine or the grape juice or whatever, and the bread that are the two components of the Last Supper that Jesus asked us to do in remembrance of him. And he invests the body and the blood of Christ into the wine and the bread, so that when you come up to Holy Eucharist and you take the wine or grape juice and you eat the bread, you are eating Christ. You are inhaling and just saturating yourself with that unconditional love that is the Christ. And when you go back to your seat after Holy Communion, you carry that living Christhood within you. And hopefully it'll last the week. Now, a lot of people, especially in the Catholic Church, go every day to Communion to start the day because of the fact that they want that contact with Christhood. So that is the ritual that most are aware of. And it focuses on the one infinite Creator. One of the quotes that Casey Gab offered is very telling in this regard. And now my hands are not turning pages. Here we go. in magic. Let's see, let me find it. What you're doing, basically, okay, I'm not finding it. This is typical of me. I was thinking, oh, I'm going to use that quote. That's really good. And now I can't find it.
I've got it pulled up if you want me to.
No, I've got it. I'm looking at it. But I'm not seeing the quote that I wanted. The quote that I wanted had to do with the fact that anything that had to do with magic, anything that had to do with true magic, had to do with our becoming closer and closer to the one infinite creator and just saturating ourselves in that unconditional love, so that everything that sprang from us was springing from the tuned vibration with as little distortion as possible from absolute unconditional love, the logos. So I actually, in the 70s, got interested enough in magic that I wrote W.E. Butler, who at the time was still alive, but he was no longer taking students. And I found a student of his who lived in the Canary Islands. And he was willing to take me on as a student. And he said, now, you will have to spend at least 4 hours a day in meditation and working on ritual so that, you know, you can become more and more effective at creating changes in consciousness at will, which is the basic definition of magic in the white magical system. So when you're looking at magic, you don't have to go into the ceremony. And that's what I finally decided. I decided that I was in relationship with Don, and Don was actually very needy. He didn't do anything for himself. He didn't eat properly. He didn't dress properly. He needed care and feeding. And he was so humbly grateful just for me to fix food for him and to get his laundry done and just all of the things that a normal housewife would do. That was a lot of our relationship, was my taking care of him, whether it was the most mundane thing or whether it was something to do with having to go in town and do legal things, you know, get his insurance corrected or whatever. He disliked intensely even having to go into the downtown area, much less do business there. And so I tried to take as much as possible off of him. And I felt that if I were to enter into the formal initiation, excuse me, of white ritual magic, I would be unable to spend the time that he needed. And the one thing I didn't mention that he needed was companionship. He had been alone for a long, long time. He had never, except for, you know, drinking beers with his buddies and from the Army and from flying and so forth, and, you know, the rough male companionship that he always had. He didn't have a home life. He didn't have a home. And I was his home. And he valued my companionship to the point where he wouldn't let me get a job. I tried and tried to get a job because it didn't occur to me that I wouldn't be working when I agreed to work with Don. It just didn't occur to me that he wouldn't want me to participate in paying the bills. But it was much more important to him for me to stay home. And he never said that. He just found ridiculous reasons for me not to take these really good jobs that I kept getting. So finally, after a couple of years of fruitlessly trying to be of service in ways that were not helpful to him, I realized that what he needed was something I had never thought I would be, which was a stay-at-home wife with no kids, just one really, really tall kid that needed care and feeding, that it just really was so grateful for my companionship. So I never pursued magic, but I did a whole lot of reading. I did more reading in the area of magic than I ever did in any other area of the paranormal. And I feel that I have a fairly deep understanding of it. And I really recommend to Casey Girl that she get a book by W.E. Butler. It doesn't matter which one, actually. He's a wonderful writer. The one that Jim and I are reading in Morning Offering, again, for probably the fourth time, is Magic, Its Ritual, Power, and Purpose. Is that right?
That's the one book, the small book that came before we're reading.
Okay. I get them mixed up. Then what is it?
It's The Magician, His Training and Work.
Training and Work. Okay, either of those or Apprentice to Magic is also a wonderful book. And he's excellent at bringing a person into the awareness of what it is to live magically, to have that discipline of the personality so that you don't spend a lot of time in negative emotion. Not that you don't have negative emotion, you accept the negative emotion, you express it, and you move back into the tuning. And you're constantly tuning yourself to less distortion from the vibration of total unconditional love. So this is a kind of different riff, because I'm not trying to inspire as much as I'm trying to inform. It is very inspiring to be working with magic, with these principles. and it's a very positively oriented, I desire to know in order to serve, is the cry of the magician. And you're always looking to serve, but you're seeing everybody as the creator. You're seeing everybody at the soul level, and you're seeing yourself at the soul level. It's not that you leave your human self behind, but you attempt at all times to tune yourself to your highest and best as you meet the incarnational moment. And hopefully you're meeting that moment with that radiance of being that comes from being close to the Creator and feeling the joy of union. Mickey, I know you're very passionate about this subject too. What would you like to add?
Well, Ra went a little further with the definition of magic than the traditional one that you just shared, which was the ability to create changes in consciousness at will. That's the one that Butler uses and Dion Fortune, Israel Regarding, all of the classic Western writers use.
And that's not other people's will. That's strictly your own will. You're working on yourself.
Right.
If you're a white magician.
But Ra suggested that even more basic a definition, and one which explains how that one works, is it was the conscious ability to use the subconscious mind. And this is a process of finding out really who you are. A lot of the writers that we've read recently, especially Israel Regardi, suggest that it's really important for a person who wishes to become a white magician to undergo some system of self-therapy or therapy with a psychologist or psychiatrist, because when you engage in the releasing of powers of the subconscious mind, sometimes these powers are unknown and overwhelming, and we need to become familiar with what's there. The child within that is talked about so frequently in psychological circles is a child that lives within the subconscious mind, and sometimes that child has had a rough upbringing and is not totally in tune with what we're doing consciously, and sometimes we have physical ailments or mental ailments, emotional ailments that come because there's a disjointed relationship between the conscious and subconscious mind, that child within, and the maturing adult that is attempting to grow with that child still having been wounded. So Ross suggested that if we are able to consciously access the subconscious mind, then we are able to release powers that are previously unavailable to us, powers that are more in tune with the creation about us and with the larger subconscious mind that Jung spoke about, the collective unconscious. And you go further into what Ra called the racial mind or the planetary mind, and you can go further than that into what Ra called the archetypical mind, the basic blueprint for our evolution, the way we grow, architecture of the mind that is rather hierarchical in nature. And then as we go further into the mind, we have more the powers of the mind that become available to us, so that as a conscious white magician, then, we are seeking to harness these powers to be of service to others, to meet the standards by which we've set ourselves to accomplish a goal. Each working that a magician does has a goal, and the primary goal, as Ra said, is union with the Creator. And Ra also suggested that for the time that we are serving as a white magician, we are making a bridge between not just our conscious mind and subconscious mind, but we're working with our higher self. And another word that Ra used or phrase for the higher self is the magical personality. They're one and the same thing. This higher self supposedly exists at the mid-sixth density level, where both wisdom and love have been brought into balance, and in this balanced form then are able to produce what we would see as a spiritual power, a power that can accomplish work in a conscious fashion according to the desire and the designs of the white magician. We also discovered, as this quote that Carla mentioned, that the sexual energy exchange aids in a magical sense in the vitality, say, that Carla had while we were undertaking the raw contact. And we discovered this by chance, that when Carla and I would have a sexual energy exchange the night before a session, that session would be longer than the normal session being one in which we did not have a sexual energy exchange before, the night before. So when we finally did query Ra about that, we discovered that our discovery was correct, and that it was very helpful to have a sexual energy exchange before the sessions with Ra, because this provided more vital energy for those of Ra to use during the session. And Ra defined vital energy as the combination of the energy of the mind, the energy of the body, and the energy of the spirit together. And since Carla has always been somewhat short of physical energy, that's what the male has in excess and is able to transfer to the female in the sexual energy exchange. So this was very helpful during the raw contact to lengthen the sessions and to allow us to ask more questions and to get more information from Ra. So that's the basic definition that Ra used, the conscious ability to utilize the subconscious mind.
This is good. Please continue. I'd love to hear more.
Do you have a follow-up?
Gosh, several things popped up, but let me backtrack all the way back to the beginning when you were talking about the Eucharist in the Christian tradition. You know, I was brought up Catholic, and I participated in what they call the Holy Eucharist hundreds of times, and it was never, ever explained like that to me, and I never... had.
Right, it's not explained like that in the dogma, no. But that's
yeah,
that's
not
what it is.
Yeah, and I never felt anything one way or the other. I mean, it was just something you did, you know, when I was a kid. So it's really cool to hear that added deeper dimension, that you see it, you know, in that way. That's really amazing. And I'm, you know, the way that it was intended to be. And I just wonder how many people even have a clue that's some, you know, that that's even a ritual at all, really. So later, I got into more pagan-flavored magic. And so when I think of magic, that's what I think of. So do you have any thoughts on that and any, like, correlations like between the different traditions? What's that?
You mean Wiccan magic?
A little bit, but more working with the archetypes and tarot. So I guess you'd call it high magic, not so much Wiccan. I'm a dabbler, so I can't really speak too intelligently on this.
Well,
I'm just curious about
the thing about the use of the tarot card is usually they're used to tell fortunes, and this was quite insulting to the creators of the tarot, who used them as initiatory concept complexes that you studied and studied and studied until you could draw them, you could see them with your eyes closed, with your eyes open. You knew these images so well, and you began to see how you could be one or the other of these archetypes at the appropriate time. I never got into the archetypes too much. Jim and I studied them for years, but we never committed them to memory, and we kept going over them and over them and over them, and we couldn't break through. And I don't know what, you know, fault we had within us that kept us from doing that, but we'd get so far, and we'd get really, you know, inspired at that level, and then we realize, you know, we're getting nowhere. And we even had several meetings that were strictly studying the tarot, and they were really well attended, and we discussed them 6 ways from Sunday, and a lot of good things were said, but we never really broke through. The closest anybody I know has come to working with the tarot that Ra offered is Steve Timon, Professor Steve Timon, who is a PhD philosopher, and he wrote a book called A Fool's Phenomenology, which we do have for sale at the store. I think we may have sold out. We may be waiting for him to get more copies. At any rate, this was his attempt to move into the archetypes, to connect them to the classical line of Western philosophy. And it was a totally brilliant book for those who were steeped in philosophy. I was, Jim wasn't. Jim was going, whoa, and I was going, this is brilliant, you know. So it was one of those books that would have a very small audience. But we did eventually sell out, and so it did have its audience. I hope that we get more books like that. But the way that you can tell that you've left high magic behind is that you're involving other people. When you're telling fortunes with the tarot, they're very magical, of course. What's magical about any set of images, the Indian tarot, the rider, what is that?
Rider-Waite
deck, all the, you can take any set of images and work with them and get them into your own psychic levels. And when somebody sits down and you do a deck, you know, the random, the way you, you know, the classical way that you put out the cards and then you turn them over one at a time, it doesn't take long before you're getting a lot of psychic material about the other person from the cards. But it's not actually from the cards. It's from the connection between yourself and the other person and the connection between yourself and the cards. So you're basically offering psychic material from your subconscious that you use consciously. But the problem is that you're doing this with another person, and there's always the possibility of influencing that other person beyond the bounds of free will. And this keeps it from being able to be without distortion. It will always be distorted by that hunger that the person has that's getting the reading for, tell me about my finances, tell me about my love life, tell me, you know, about this and that. And it was never intended to deal with the specific. It was intended to deal with the metaphysical principles that hold the universe together. And it was intended for that one person, and that one person would gradually recreate the tarot within himself, and it would be his tarot. It would be different than anybody else's. The meanings would be right for him, not for anybody else. And Ra was very careful at all times to say, you know, this is yours. This is subjective. This is how you learn and how you go deeper. And and it's very difficult to get that you would use a pack of cards like that, not for your sharing with another person, but strictly for yourself. It seems like you're spending an awful lot of time on yourself, and isn't that selfish? You know, that's the way it feels. And that's the way it felt to me beyond a certain point. I didn't see how I could maintain the intensity of being an initiatory magician and still come home and cook dinner and look at TV with Don, go to movies, and do whatever he needed done. It did not lend itself to the little life. And so I decided to attempt to live my magic completely underground, and that the only way that people would feel that I was a magical person was because of the radiance of my being, the Christhood that would come through instead of me. I love what somebody said one time: when they look at me, I hope they see Christ first and me second. I've never succeeded in submerging my personality into Christ. I have quirks and flaws, and I've never become more than a bozo. But hopefully there is a radiance of being there to a certain extent that has allowed me to do the channeling and to, you know, help to my creativity so that I could write and so forth. And it's helped me in my whole life, and I hopefully have lived a fairly magical life. Jim, you want to talk about that with the tarot and you know what Monica asked?
Well, I guess living the magical life is what everybody's really trying to do when they seek the truth of our experience and existence, why we're here. What our lives mean, where we're going with our lives. We're all trying to find what the real purpose is, what the goal is, and each of us has a certain take on it. And throughout our life experiences, we gain various kinds of knowledge, and we put it together as a kind of a puzzle. Don was always talking about how various parts of the puzzle of the UFO phenomenon, of psychic surgery, of cattle mutilations, of all these various phenomena, were coming together into forming a puzzle and putting the puzzle together so we could see it in its entirety, or at least see more of it than we've seen before. So the everyday life is informed and made more magical by our conscious attention to it. And we attempt to design something about how this journey will take place. Now, we're always subject to the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, I guess. But then we also are learning. We're, as Russ said, we're using the catalyst of our everyday experiences to gain experience, to gain knowledge, to gain wisdom, and to begin opening our hearts. And as we do this, we become more magical. We become more able to consciously affect how we proceed on our journeys, how things happen in our lives. Coincidences begin to come our way. We begin to say, do you know what happened to me the other day? Listen to this. And, you know, everybody's got stories like that. and we begin to collect them. We begin to feel like we're in the flow, we're in the moment, and that there's a certain energy that we've tapped into that allows us to reveal even more about the mysteries of our lives and those big questions we've got, and how we begin to put the puzzle together a little more each day or each time that we go through a certain kind of catalyst. So all of us are working to become a magician of a kind, and the white magical work or any type of structured magical work is an attempt to make this more efficient, to become more creative, to become more skilled. Ross said that the negatively oriented entity that was monitoring the raw contact and was attempting to either take the power or to put the light out didn't have the native power of our group, but this entity had the skill of the swordsman. What power he had, which was extensive and is, he was able to use very efficiently. The attempt to make certain things happen. To cause Carla, for example, on one walk we took one day, to have difficulty breathing because there had been an inability on her part previously to speak honestly to Don about what was going on as we were attempting to relocate to Atlanta and move, and she had feelings about this house, and she couldn't express them and get them out. So this was an opening, a chink that was made, and the negatively oriented entity was able to use that chink in her armor of light at the throat level and to begin to make the throat to close. So, you know, this is a quite significant power. I mean, this entity does not exist in our third density, but was able to move from its experience in the fifth density to ours and have an effect upon her. So there is a great range of ability that exists in the use of the powers that we regain as we become seekers of truth and learn more efficiently and continue to travel this path with perseverance and dedication. So what we're really trying to do is to make our life a magical reality, to consciously affect how it comes out while rolling with those things, you know, moving in harmony with things that we cannot change. That, again, is another way of exerting and then applying our power as seekers of truth, to be able to move with that which you cannot change, and then what you can change, then you do. So we're all magicians of a kind.
Yes, we are. And I think the more that we can find joy, that's the key, that word joy, the joy of union with the Creator. when you really do feel that union, it just bursts through you, and the joy is incredible. So I think that is something that we can all, when we're trying to see, how are you doing, you know? Well, if we're being sober sides and we're being serious and we're striving and we're studying, you know, and we're just weighing ourselves down with these expectations and so forth. On the other hand, if we're looking to create within ourselves a fountain of joy so that our open hearts are constantly allowing the love and light of the Creator to just flow through with, you know, total, you know, unhindered energy, then, you know, whatever it is that we are in life, a mom, a lawyer, a doctor, a McJob person that, you know, hasn't been able to get far in life, whatever it is that our circumstances are, if that joy is there, that is everything.
Well, thank you both. I have a follow-up comment on what you said earlier about the tarot, Carla. Mm-hmm. And it's true, so many people, so many of the books about the tarot are all about doing readings, you know, to use it as an oracle to predict the future and all that. And I just never got into any of that kind of thing. But when I first... Gosh, before I even read The Law of One, I came across a book called The Inner Guide Meditation by Edwin Steinbrecher. Are you familiar with that?
No, I should be.
It totally blew my mind. This was before I discovered the Law of One, about a year before that, actually. And it basically is this meditation where you go in and you contact your higher self, and he gives all these guidelines for making sure that you do have your true, well, he calls it your inner guide, but I thought of it as the higher self, and make sure that it's not a false guide, he says. And then basically you talk to your inner guide about problems in your own life, not trying to affect someone else, but yourself, working on yourself. And then you work with the appropriate archetypal energies that have to do with that particular problem. So the whole idea is you balance these energies in yourself, and then those problems tend to clear up. Yeah. And the times that I did this meditation, they were very, very powerful. I mean, really, I mean, it was like the next day things would just change in my life. It was incredible.
But, what was the name of that book again and the author?
The Inner Guide Meditation, and the author is Edwin Steinbrecher, Steinbrecher. And it was just a really powerful book. Steinbrecher, and they have it. Actually, Israel Regardi did the foreword or something. Yeah, and they have it on Amazon.com. They actually have an updated version. Now, I think he passed on a few years back, but there's actually an updated version from the one I have that I did get later, but that's really what formed my foundation of understanding on the archetypes. And then a year later, to get the Law of One, I was like, whoa. Which brings me to my next question. You know, I found book 4 to be very difficult, and I know a lot of other people did too. And that's the one book you? That's the one book that, you know, I got about halfway through it. And the second half, you know, I read it, but I just, you know, I still keep thinking, I'm going to go back and really study book 4. And I just never can seem to do it. Is that something that maybe we could cover here on the show? That I was thinking maybe we could do a little bit, you know, systematically.
Our problem, excuse me, as we got beyond what we had studied before, you know, we started out with a wide amount of knowledge that we had, you know, collected over the years, and Don especially studied since 55, and he had all kinds of questions on that. But then when Don decided he wanted to study the archetypes, and the Ra said, well, you could do that three ways. You can do it with astrology, you can do it with the Tree of Life, you know, white ritual magic, or you can do it with a tarot. Well, I have always been kind of befuddled by astrology. It seems like it's a lot of math and a lot of looking things up in tables and a lot of study. You have to study for several years before you even begin to get a really good idea of what it is. And I didn't think we were going to get a quick trip into that by questioning on it. And we had all studied magic, but we felt that maybe that wasn't appropriate either. I don't remember why now. Maybe you do, Jim. And so we picked the tarot, and none of us was familiar with the tarot. None of us. And so we were babes in the woods, and you can tell from some of our starting questions that we were just nowhere, you know. And so we began really to study the Egyptian tarot very intensively, and we began to ask better questions. But beyond a certain point, we got beyond ourselves again, and we were scrambling to catch up with the knowledge that was pouring out from Ra, and we weren't assimilating it as fast as the sessions. And when you consider that the sessions were really slow, it goes to show you how much study we were doing and how much more that we needed to do. So that's the reason that the second half of book 4 is such a bear, is that Ra was struggling to answer questions that were very distorted and trying to find, you know, the thread of truth in questions that didn't you know, hold a complete understanding. And I think if we had it to do again, which we don't, we would be able probably to go further with it, since we have in the intervening years studied a lot, worked a lot with the Tarot, and would probably be far more able to question. We only really got a solid hold on the archetypes of the mind, and the archetypes of the body and the archetypes of the spirit, we touched on them rather than really covering them and really getting a good a good amount of material. Would you say that's a fair statement, Jim?
Right. The mind was an area where we were able to question in some depth, and we're hopeful that with that information plus what we were able to touch on with the body and the spirit, that there could be extrapolations made from the mind, because Ra mentioned that the mind was the creator of the body, basically, and that the spirit was that which informed the creation of the body by the mind.
And the mind, yeah.
So there is enough information there that if we really worked at it, I think we could get a better understanding than we have. And just as a coincidence, that's the book we're working on now. We have a morning offering where we read something from the Law of One, something from the Bible, and something from a couple of other books of inspiration. And right now we're on book four. And so we're making our way through it again, and maybe we'll come out with just a little bit more understanding this time. But if anybody would be interested in doing some more work in any of these interviews concerning the archetypical mind, I'm sure we'd be glad to do it.
Yeah, ask questions. You know, that's what prompts us. That's certainly what prompted me tonight to go to magic, was my desire to get Casey Girl off the bottom of the question list, because it was such a deserving question.
I'll have to send her a message and let her know we covered that, because she actually didn't submit the question for the radio show. It was just something she asked on the forum, so just happened to find it. So that's why we weren't getting to it, yeah, because I was going to the actually submitted questions first, but I'll let her know so that she can hear this. Okay, well, we have that was great. That was a lot of good information. I'm going to just do, I think we just have time for one more question. This is from Derek. Derek says, Carla, there's a paradox that I'm hoping to solve. I hope you can help me. I am of the belief that the creator is love. I've heard you and others mention this several times. I've also gotten this from reading the Law of One. However, they also say that essentially the creator is not love, but intelligent infinity, and that love is just an energy created by the creator. You can see the paradox. Can you please extrapolate on this as best you can? Thank you so much. Many blessings.
Well, thank you for the question and the trust in me, and I will attempt to respond. In the first place, this isn't the place, this isn't the density where paradoxes are solved. That is sixth density wisdom. And for us in third density, seeking the ways of love, the Creator expresses itself in love. And it is our best bet in terms of graduating from this realm and moving on to higher studies, to focus on love rather than focusing on wisdom or focusing on unity, simply because our whole nature is created to study love. That is our lesson. It's like if we're in third grade and we want to study calculus, and we haven't done algebra, we haven't done geometry, but calculus fascinates us. We might get a few questions in, but there's going to be a big gap where we really can't resolve the paradox. I think the closest people come on that I've seen writers come to resolving the paradox are those Indian, and I mean Indian Indians, not American natives, who feel that the Creator created the universe out of himself, but there was a whole lot left over. And so the Creator is both that which was created and more than that which was created. So it behooves us, I think, as third density students to focus on the ways of love and to find our way into the open heart, so that as we move into the density of love and understanding, we have done all that we can to prepare ourselves for the next grade, the next level. And we will be studying love in the next density. We will be studying it at a much higher level. When we move into, when we graduate fourth density and go into fifth density, we will be studying wisdom. And we will be seeing the Creator as wisdom. And when we move finally into the density of unity, we will be unifying love and wisdom to get, you know, at long last, to get that picture of reality which Ra offers, that in his density all paradoxes are resolved. There is no paradox, no polarity. All is one, and that unity is everything. So, you know, we're babes, and I think that we can have our moments going straight to that truth of unity, but to try to stay there, I think, is to exceed the lesson plan and to exceed our vibration, our DNA, our whole nature. We have so much distortion in us that keeps us from keeping our hearts open. I can't tell you how many times, even in one day, that I find myself closing my heart one way or another. Either I'm mad at somebody else, upset with somebody else, or I'm upset with myself. And by far, I would say 90% of the time, I'm closing my heart against myself. Disappointed, just I cried today. I was so disappointed in myself. There's so much treasure to dig up and to balance before we can move on into these higher intensities of love and light. And I think it's good to be humble, and it's good to accept the fact that in this density the paradoxes are not resolved, and that there is a very definite bunch of polarity going on, and it's up to us to make the choice of which polarity to choose, which polarity to follow. Do we serve the Creator by serving others, or do we serve the Creator by serving ourselves, by seeing everybody else in the world as possibly useful and otherwise not relevant, you know. Seeing everybody as a pawn. Everybody, what's that cannon fodder unit, CFU, that some generals have used in talking about the troops on the ground? They are expendable in the pursuit of policy. And don't let me get into that, because that's a whole other story. But many have died being pawns, trying to take a hill in Korea, trying to flush out a nest in Vietnam, trying to get past that river or take that town, or you know, take that bit of Afghanistan or Iraq that we need in order to have our national policies go smoothly as far as access to oil and other resources that are considered absolutely necessary for the future of the American people. Most people don't think like this, but this is a very good example of service to self polarity, and it is very logical. It is defendable, and I would never try to argue it with somebody who is doing it, because they are saying, look, we've got a whole nation to protect and to serve, and a few, you know, cannon fodder units are expendable in order to pursue our policy. And as long as we get that which we need, as long as, you know, we come out on top, we've won the game and the American people are safe. And the value of the individual is nil. And when you see what's happened to people coming home from war, and how a lot of times there's months and months of waiting just to get the therapy that is called for every soldier coming home, that he needs in order to adapt to civilian life. If you see that in the statistics, there are as many soldiers who have committed suicide as who have died in the pursuit of national policy. You can see that the effect of service to self polarity on the individual is cruel, heartless, and unbelievably vicious. But when you listen to the think tanks who are explaining that they are trying to help us all and protect us all, and they are seeing it on a higher level, then there's really no defense. It's service to self is as defensible as service to others. It's a matter of how you want to live. Now, I feel good with the service to others polarity, and I think all of the listeners that are here do. They want to pursue service to others. They want to pursue union with the Creator as opposed to seeing the self as the creator and seeing everything else in the universe as a game to be played. And I guess that pretty well says what I think about what our job is here in Third Density. I don't think it's to resolve the paradoxes. I think the paradoxes are alive and well in Third Density, and I think that's okay. I think what we need to do is to begin resolving the paradoxes within ourselves. If I desire to serve, and yet I am so hard on myself that I drive myself to tears, just how successful have I been today? You know? So, you know, you recover from these moments. You tune back up, and you get back in your service to others game of finding that joy of union with the Creator. But whether you are closing your heart because of somebody else or because of yourself, it's the same thing. You're closing your heart. So we need to stay humble and focus on open the heart. Okay, open the heart again. Okay, open the heart again. And just do it and do it and do it some more. That is our life. And I think if you watch a mother with their children, most mothers, everything flies away when it comes to their kids. They love those kids so much that there's just no expressing it. The sight of that child is joy. And you light up because that child is there. And you're a fountain of love because of that child. And, you know, it's one of the best ways to learn how to love is to have a child. And then you don't really learn how to love. You're just given the gift of love.
Beautiful. Absolutely. And as a mother, I will definitely agree with that. And everything you just said really spoke to me, Carla. I really, really appreciate all that, because that's something that I have a hard time with, too. I am really, really hard on myself and close the heart regarding myself, so I can definitely relate to that. You know, something that's really spoken to me that you've said, you've mentioned many, many times, is that constant attuning. That has really, I've really taken that to heart, and I think about that a lot, what you said. So thank you for that. It's very helpful. Okay, we are out of time. Thank you, Carla and Jim. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please check out llresearch.org, which is the LL Research archive website. Check out the Law of One material and the channeling transcripts and publications and lots more. Also, bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org. And you can submit questions for the show there at bringforth.org. We are here every Friday. We'll be here next Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Have a good week.